Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is the Steve Jones Show. Matt Catrillo here with you. Steve will soon be there from the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, all pre-owned inventory as well. And a great service department and excellent sales staff. That's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. And every Monday show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, or at purdyinsurance.com. Home, auto, life, business, they are the pros pro when it comes to insurance needs, and they are all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. You can check out their website as well, purdyinsurance.com. And a lot to get to today, a lot to recap from the weekend, from college football especially, and in the NFL. Mark Wolgenrich, SI.com, back with us today at 3:35 to break down Penn State heading to the Outback Bowl, which was a surprise to a lot of people. They were one of a few surprises in the whole bowl lineup. Not that the college football playoff, of course, but the whole entire bowl lineup, as Penn State will take on Arkansas at noon in the Outback Bowl in Tampa on New Year's Day. So we'll break that down with Mark coming up, get his thoughts on the college football playoff. And then we have Jerry Dulac from the Steelers Radio Network, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette at 4:35. Big bombshell report out of nowhere came early in the weekend that Big Ben is quietly mentioning this is going to be his last year with the Steelers. And, of course, the Steelers got the big win yesterday against the Ravens. So we'll get a lot to get into with Jerry coming up at 4:35 today. And also the Flyers have fired their head coach, Alain Vigneault, as the team has just been off to a pretty dismal start, or a dismal stretch, I should say. They were off to a good start, but then injuries have piled on and things have gotten pretty sour in the locker room pretty quickly. The team's lost 8 in a row. They got destroyed by Tampa Bay last night, 7-1. And so him and Michel Therrien and his assistant both fired, and looks like a whole host of more changes are probably coming for the Flyers. So Sam Carcitti from the Philadelphia Inquirer is going to join us tomorrow at 3:35 to break that down. Flyers actually back in action tonight. Mike Yeo is named the interim head coach. And so that's going to be interesting to see what happens with the Flyers from there. As far as that goes, it's not surprising. It's not all on AV. There's a lot of underachieving players, and I think it's time for the Flyers to make some more moves on the roster and really blow this thing up. I think it's time. They tried to half do it because they traded Jake Voracek towards the end of last year. Got a good player in Cam Atkinson back, but I think it might be time to move on from the captain himself, Claude Giroux, and a few other vets that have been there for a while that are just underachieving right now. This is the time to do it if you're the Flyers. And I think it's also time to move on from the GM, too. I think Chuck Fletcher has done next to nothing, just about, for this team. He's a big reason why the Flyers are in this position right now. And as I said to Steve before, this was the least excited I was for a Flyers season, was this season. Because they didn't
nobody
give you a whole lot.
Nobody even knows he got fired. Move on.
I mean, that's basically how it is.
I mean, no offense. It's December 6th. Nobody even knows the Flyers made a move. I mean, people are looking around saying, are they playing? All right.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of how I've been the last couple weeks, and rightfully so.
But it's perfect for you. You thrive on other people's misery. Yeah, I mean, you're all about firings. Hirings, not so much. Firings, you love. You thrive on that. I mean, seriously, you know, I mean, for the holidays, we're all chipping in at the holiday party to get you a Grim Reaper costume. It's going to be great. You know, what the heck? Suit was able to get a deal on a sickle. It's just great.
Oh, really?
Absolutely. Oh, no. He's a wheeler and dealer. We know that.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. I underestimate him.
The ability of the suit when it comes to the ability to get a dirt cheap sickle, perfect. Kind of a king. All right. So let's start off on a positive note. You're done. I mean, I got to talk to a guy about him getting fired. What do I ask him? This is tomorrow?
This is for tomorrow, yeah. Sam Cartini.
We got Knopp tomorrow. We got, like, good stuff. All right. We're going to talk.
He'll be the low point of the show. How about that? And then we got Tony Knopp and Neil tomorrow.
He's a great guy, though.
He's a great guy, by the way.
Sam's awesome. He's a great reporter. But it's a low-interest story. Mark Wogenrich today, Jerry Dulac today, Matt Leon on your juggernaut, Gardner Minshew, Eagles.
Oh, my almighty!
But let's get to the positive of all positives today. Jack Goloszewski is 10 years old today. Yes, this is Amy and Gary's son. We know that, obviously, Amy's the heart and soul of the Tom McGrath tailgate. It's also the Tom McGrath half birthday today.
All right.
Okay. All right. It's a half birthday. And we, you know, and we've been doing review. Gary's performance review came up on the tailgate. Actually, did pretty well, to be honest with you. But, you know, you either get better or you get worse and never stay the same. Right? We're trying to keep Gary above the Mendoza line and the better. Okay. But their son, Jack, who's just, you want to talk about one of the nicest guys going. Good athlete, good golfer, too. I mean, I'd say, you know, like, he's out there playing golf against the suit. I'd make Jack, like, +8. Jack would, like, you know. And he'd be nice enough to look for the suit's ball. Mr. Suit, where's your ball, Junior? Yeah, I'm in the fairway, Mr. Suit.
F-O-U-L-E-D, that spells foul stuff.
You know that short grass that where the ball just sticks out? Jack is just so happy 10th birthday, Jack Goloszewski. They don't make him any better than that. Gary and Amy's wonderful son. So happy 10th birthday. That's why I don't want the firing of a coach nobody knows about and a franchise nobody cares about overshadowing Jack's birthday.
Hey, rightfully so.
All right, come on. You open the show about the Flyers?
Well, I had briefly mentioned the everything with college football, too. I just didn't get into more meat of the bone
yet. Oh, yeah, because we got to the part where somebody is going through misery. Misery.
Yes.
I got a voicemail from a different Jack. It's not Jack Goloszewski. The 3:30 break will be a conversation. Okay. All right. Oh, my goodness. Let's see. Hmm. Looks like we got a bowl game. All right, good. All right.
Yeah, going back to Tampa to celebrate the new year.
I haven't done that game in 11 years. Actually, it'll be 12 years. No, yeah, it'll be 11 years. 2010 season, 2011 Outback Bowl, will be the 2022 Outback Bowl. So 11 years.
And number three for you, right?
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, it's a. I think I've told you this story, but the first one I did there was with Tennessee. And they have plexiglass between the booths. So I look to the right, there's the Tennessee booth. And you know Roger Corey, right?
Of course.
And you know how Roger gets.
Yes.
Okay. So we're just in the booth. Now, look, at this time, we do have a fifth person now. It's Brian Tripp. But we're just four guys. Okay, there's Roger, there's Bob Taylor, Jack, myself, okay? And, of course, Brian's now in the field, so he's our fifth guy. So back then it was Jeff Tarman, Roger Corey, Jack, and me. We had four. We didn't have a sideline person. Four people. Okay. I mean, how many do you need? So Roger looks over into the Tennessee booth, which is to our right. And he goes, holy mackerel, look at all the people in there. I said, yeah, that's pretty crowded. Here's my assumption. What am I assuming? I'm assuming they've got guests in there, right? So Roger goes and he counts. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He goes, there are 14 people in that booth. And I said something, well, I'm sure like some of them are just guests or whatever. He goes, no, I'm going to go over and find out. I'm like, okay.
That's not surprising.
Now, at this point, exactly what is my interest level?
Zero.
Yes. I don't care if they got 1,000 people in there. All I care about is, like, what will Jack and I be doing here for the next 3.5 hours on the air? Okay. He comes back. You won't believe it. There aren't any guests over there. I said, oh, really? Well, what do they have? He goes, well, first of all, I got a play-by-play guy. And I looked over and said, well, that's a good start.
Shouldn't they have that at least? Yeah, one would think.
I said, no offense, that seems like a basic. And they have a color guy. They have two color guys.
Okay, right? that's not unusual.
Okay, so far not unusual. So play-by-play guy, two color guys, right? Two engineers.
Okay, also not that unusual.
Okay. A director, right? A booth producer, an on-field producer, a field reporter, an audio person with a parab mic on the field, two statisticians, and a spotter for Tennessee, a spotter for Penn State, and a spotter for the officials. I went, wow, I said, it's quite a group. And I said, wow. I said, nice budget operation. Well done.
I was about to say, the rest of that's somewhat excessive, but okay.
Right. Who cares? I don't care if they got 1,000 people. Yeah, what do I care what the Tennessee Network
does? That's how they roll.
Right? That's how they roll. That's what they love. That's great. I love it. And Bob Kessling does a great job. Replaced the legendary John Ward, and Bob's been great. Okay. Well, about 10 minutes later, Bob comes over into the booth.
Oh, no.
He says, he says, well, yeah, he comes over into the booth. And he says, and he's got a little bit of a southern accent, a little drawl. And he says, Steve, Jack. He says, hey, Bob, great to see you, man. I said, last time I saw you was basketball, whatever. And he says, you want to exchange a few notes? I said, sure, Bob, great. And I said, let's run by a couple things, a couple pronunciations, whatever. And he says, now look. He says, I hope y'all don't get mad at your spotters today, because we're wearing a white jerseys with the orange numerals. They're a little hard to see.
Oh, yes. Now I remember. Yes.
Right? And Jack, it's Jack Ham, slaps me on the back. He goes, boom, you're looking at him. And Bob looks over. He says, you spot your own game? I said, yeah, I said, sure, all the mistakes are mine.
Said, yes, now I remember the story, yes.
All the mistakes are mine, yeah, sure. He goes, well, why is that? And I said, I don't know. I didn't know what to say. So I said something stupid. I said, I don't know, budget cuts. Something like that. I thought I was going to have a coronary. It's no big deal.
This is Tennessee that we're talking about, after all.
I know. Meacham. Look, I got it. Meacham's 11. Swain, 7. I still remember their numbers. Arian Foster's 27. I remember all this stuff. Right? I'm okay. We're good. It's like, it's all right. And why I still remember their numbers 14 years later, I have no idea. 15 years later, I have no idea why I still remember some of their numbers. I'm a sick man.
No, you're just good with numbers. I'm the same way.
Holy man. Arian Foster, who had a pretty good run with the Texans.
Yeah, that's a name for you.
Right? Having a decent day, and Tennessee's driving down the field, and then he fumbled. And Tony Davis picked up the fumble and ran it like 70-something yards back for a touchdown. And then Tony Hunt and that offensive line, the last few minutes of the game, closed it out. 4 yards, 5 yards, 6 yards, 4 yards, 5 yards, 6 yards. Just closed the game out. It's great. That was fun. And I got most of the names right. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment. Great to have you with us today. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
You, sir, are my hero!
The weather is getting cooler and the leaves are changing in central PA. Hi, this is Season from Purdy Insurance. If your current agent is falling short, it's time to give Purdy Insurance a call. We're a local, family-owned independent agency ready to find the right insurance to fit your needs. You can call us at 570-286-5855, stop in our office on Market Street in Sunbury, or head to our website at purdyinsurance.com to find out what we can do for you.
Me, I don't really spend a whole lot of time on it. It's not anything that we have control over. The Bulls pick what they perceive to be the most attractive teams, and they have a pecking order. So I've been spending my time recruiting, spending my time on, you know, bowl practices, spending my time on trying to hire a defensive coordinator, and trying to spend a few hours, you know, with my family.
Exactly. You don't really, look, you're not going to zero in on Arkansas until maybe, I don't know, pick a date. Maybe start to get a little bit in on maybe December 20th, right around there. Anything you do before then, oh, they're practicing the entire time for the game. No. You lose everybody. There's a point of diminishing returns. I mean, the suit locks in on that Shikellamy opener for months, and you can tell by the middle of the first quarter, he's done. He's mentally drained. I don't know, what the heck. Just make sure you cover Treylon Burks. We're good. Okay. 40% of their pass game goes to one guy. What, you didn't think I did any prep?
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Apologize for the slight delay there as Mr. Ham, I guess he was able to get that court order on the suit extended. What? What? It's just, we looked at it as good news. All right, with that, let's go to the hotline here. Our show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Mark Welgen, richsi.com. Mark, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Appreciate it, Steve. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, Jack and I were literally just talking about this on the phone, about how
wait,
this...
Wait, I have to follow Jack Ham now. Okay, bye. Sorry.
it was a private
my goodness.
it wasn't an on-air conversation.
Okay.
But we were saying about how it broke Penn State's way, and I think actually not going to this game for 11 years is what really broke in their favor.
Oh, to the Outback Bowl. Yeah, it was funny because I got a friend of mine had like reached out to me late last week and said, could Penn State go to the Outback Bowl? I heard that they could potentially go to the Outback Bowl. And I really honestly dismissed it because I said, yeah, I don't see how that's conceivable. I had it in my mind, though, that Wisconsin was 9-3. Once I checked the standings, saw they were 8-4. And I started thinking about it. I thought, absolutely, why not? Especially, you know, put three teams in the playoff, which are in the New Year's Six games, the playoff and the New Year's Six games. Iowa then to the Citrus Bowl. Why couldn't they, you know, with your pool essentially for the Outback Bowl and the following bowls being Wisconsin, Penn State, Purdue, Minnesota? It's a great, you know, it's a great landing spot there. You know, with having really kind of, I guess, essentially competing with Wisconsin for that spot, are they better positioned to go to Wisconsin or to go to Las Vegas being the hour earlier? That was one of the things that always struck me is anybody from Penn State really behind the scenes kind of giving a little pause to the idea of playing a game that might end at 2 a.m. on the East Coast?
Right.
I thought that might be kind of a mitigating point. And like you said, 11 years since going there, I know the games that I've been doing, the Outback Bowl, have been really well represented by Penn State people, and I think this energizes the fan base that that having had been disappointed by the end of the season.
Yeah, no, I think it does. I think it gave everybody a little extra jump. We're like, okay, which is
gave me a jump.
Yeah, I mean, what the heck? I mean, I already checked the advanced forecast; going to be in the low 70s. I'm like, I'm good. Tell them to kick it off. I'm ready.
Exactly, and it's a great matchup too. It's a first time matchups in bowls are always really interesting to me. Arkansas seems like I hadn't seen a lot of them, but I saw a little bit of the game against Alabama. Took them right to that wire, and that seems like a team really kind of headed in the right direction. Under Sam Pittman. So I like the way they put that whole thing together, and as you said, the way it came together in Penn State's favor.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think Arkansas is a team I kind of looked at two or three weeks ago as a possible opponent somewhere. So I've done a little bit of glancing at them along the way. He's done a heck of a job as a coach there.
Yeah.
I mean, Arkansas was kind of given up for a while.
Yeah, at one point I think they had reached number 8. They had a little bit of that Penn State in them early on, 4 games, reached top 10, and then you've got to run that gauntlet SEC schedule. I think it was, Georgia, Mississippi, Auburn in a stretch, or Georgia, Mississippi, Texas A&M, something like that, that they went into, a really brutal stretch of games. But having come out of the Georgia game, everything else really close, like Texas A&M, I think it was a one-point game, except Alabama. One possession game. So first time games always interest me, especially with teams that have been playing football for a long time.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So I got to ask you, I thought watching, I'll start with Michigan, then I'll get to Alabama. I thought the Michigan coaching staff, to their credit, put two or three trick plays in the first quarter. After that big emotional win over Ohio State, Mark, you can tell they practiced something that was fun and different, which then changes the interest level, and I thought that was brilliantly played by them.
Yeah, I didn't consider in that perspective, but you're absolutely right, because we saw maybe a little bit of them, not to that nearly that extent. But the receiver throw for the long touchdown. I mean, I thought they stayed true to who they were the last 2 weeks against Ohio State and Iowa, but blossomed a little bit, branched out a little bit. And I think you're right that I entered that game thinking, can Michigan sustain that level of having just beaten Ohio State for the first time in how many years? and then have to play another game that, you know, at that point is even more important, because then you, now you're playing for something even greater than the Big Ten title.
Right.
And I was just, like, thoroughly impressed with the way they followed one performance with another. I don't think you can say that about what happened in the SEC title game. On either side, Alabama looked like a completely different football team than the one that scored 3 points through 59 minutes against Auburn. Likewise, Georgia. There, Michigan did not look like a completely different football team those 2 weeks. It looked like it had, since that Penn State game, since they got that that kind of almost broken play touchdown to the tight end against Penn State, that play seemed to me almost to revive them in a way.
Yeah.
And send them on a curve, a curve back upward toward the end of the season. I don't discount them in any way in the playoff.
No. There's also something that history is a great teacher, and I probably should have considered this when looking at Alabama and Georgia. If you've noticed, when Alabama has lost, what has the opponent done in recent years? They broke 40. This year, Texas A&M, 41-38.
Yep.
There's no way Georgia scores 40 on that team. They can't do it with their quarterback.
Now, and then I wonder how they respond. From their perspective, would they have wanted the rematch in the playoff? I know the position that everybody from the outside takes is that there's no way that there would be a rematch, because you don't want that for television and fans and things like that. But with Georgia, how is Georgia now going to respond, having lost now, 7 straight games to Alabama, and having to stew over that for a couple of weeks, and then try to get into a mindset of playing a team that's thoroughly different in Michigan, but always looking like toward the horizon again as, we just get one more shot at Alabama. That is not a team to in any way overlook whatsoever. Because I think Michigan, the way they've risen could beat both those teams on a good day, on their better day.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I'm watching Bryce Young, and the Georgia secondary is a weakness to begin with. But I'll tell you who was a gigantic disappointment in that game. It was the Davis kid up front. I mean, they ran him out of gas. They ran him out of gas in the first quarter.
Yeah, and the fact I'm just thoroughly blanking on the receiver, the Alabama receiver, Williams. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, Williams, who played Ohio State. Yeah, he played against Penn State.
From Ohio State. When you could go from, this is astonishing to me, and this is kind of, I think, is where James Franklin is looking, like, when he talks about stacking classes, that's exactly what he means, that if you can go from a room in Ohio State where you are not going to be the number one to leading the SEC, I think, in receiving yards, and having, being a number one at a place like Alabama, that's where those programs, they live in that ether that, that James Franklin said it a couple of weeks ago. It's not about just this 22 recruiting class coming in. We got to keep stacking them. We've got to be able to put guys in the field. So when somebody goes down, there's potentially a better player on the field waiting who just might not have the reps behind it, but just actually might be better than the guy in front of them. I see that in Alabama.
Right, and that's what they do. They do stack them. There's just no getting around it. And now with Mechie out, there'll be some other young guy that will step in and play in Mechie's spot.
Right, right, exactly. When you could flip, Jalen Hurts into a, back-to-back years in big games, that sort of thing, you've got a recruiting edge.
So what do you think about Cincinnati in all this? Because they're going to get Alabama.
And I love the fact, it's weird because I just have not been able to watch Cincinnati, so I don't know a ton about them. I think, quarterback-wise, would they have the second-best quarterback situation perhaps in the playoff? I mean, if you're looking at players who can, if you pick the quarterback that you think can win you a game, are they second among these four teams behind Alabama? I mean, could you make that argument? I don't know. I'm just really happy that they got in there, because I really believe that that element has to be preserved in college football. I just didn't want it to become the playoff to become just a tiered format where it's not just the same teams every year, but that there's really no hope for teams like Cincinnati and UCF and Houston going way back. That their margin for error already is just so small that they've got to go into a conference title game and think, okay, we can't just win by two touchdowns. So them getting in, yeah, why not? Why can't they give Alabama a game playing in perfect mode?
Right. By the way, just a quick note for everybody. The last time Alabama lost a game where the opponent scored less than 40 was Auburn in the Iron Bowl in 2017, 26-14. It's the last time they lost a game where the opponent scored less than 40.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. I mean, Clemson beat him, scored 44. Let's see. Auburn beat him, scored 48. LSU beat him, scored 46. Texas A&M beat him, scored 41.
Right. All with number one quarterbacks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, those are the last losses they've had that you've had to score 40 against them.
Yeah.
To beat them. Wow.
Yeah, and who among the group is capable of doing that against Alabama?
None.
I mean,
zero.
Is Michigan the best position too? Maybe. Yeah.
But that's only a maybe.
Right. Exactly.
I'm just throwing it out there so people understand. Like, what does it take to beat them? You got to score 40.
That's a great point.
Let's start with the basics. History is the greatest teacher. Obviously, Penn State will get to this game. How interested are you as to, Penn State's, obviously Micah Parsons opted out for a season, but nobody's ever really not played in the bowl game before. Which guys are you eyeing just to see what their decision will be on this?
I think the two most obviously are Jahan Dotson and Jaquan Brisker. Now, I've not really... having interviewed Jaquan Brisker and seeing what the team means to him, I wouldn't put in a position... I wouldn't make a guess on him. I got to know Jahan over the years, even covering him back in high school.
Yeah.
So, personality-wise, I don't know... And I don't want to say what surprised me, because nothing... That's the wrong term for it. I could see him going, just Jahan in particular, I could see him going either way, and everybody respecting that decision going either way.
Yes, he will be respected no matter what.
Yeah. There really shouldn't be, I don't think there should be any discussion or just any objection to either decision that he would make. If he plays, if he wants to go down there and play and participate in this game, with a team, I would guess it would be something similar to what Penn State did with Saquon Barkley at the Fiesta Bowl.
Agreed.
And that he was,
it
was reduced reps. They brought him in. He had a couple of, that 85, 90-yard carry or whatever that was. But that
92.
Was Miles Sanders' game. Yeah, for the most part, I could see that being the same thing going on here. And you've got some young receivers who you want to give this opportunity. Looking across the board, that could be, there could be more players. You see, even if they're going and they're there, maybe they're not as not as involved as much. With Jaquan Brisker, I think that's different because he's such not that Jahan Dotson is not a huge part of your offense, but Jaquan Brisker is so elemental to that defense, and I don't think they have the depth behind that to really fill that. To fill that safety spot, that role he brings. So if he's there, I guess he would probably play more. I'm looking forward to seeing who they bring out. Who are the guys? Who are the guys that are going to play? Is Christian Vayu going to get some more snaps?
Yeah.
In the bowl game, I think it'd be a great opportunity for him to to take some reps in that game as well. Because you want him going into this, you want him going into spring or winter workouts in spring, with a head of confidence. thinking, they're a freshman quarterback coming in, but don't forget about me.
Yeah. Right. One last question. The first question James got yesterday, once he finally got on there, was about defensive coordinator. Yeah, about Brent to begin with, but the search for a DC. How interesting was that answer he gave?
The second part of it, to me, was the most interesting because, James Franklin knows he's going to replace coaches. It's not that, that's just in this day and age, he absolutely knows that. So he's got his list. You know, he's probably had a list for a couple of years each time Brent Pry is, taking an interview, or maybe he's got a step toward the door, that sort of thing. It was that second part when he said, he called it a significant loss. And this is, personally and professionally, I think for him, a guy he's known for 25 plus years, going back to, Eddie Stroudsburg, and been on the staff for 11 years, I think having that bond, that guy you can lean on, I'm going to say crutch, but yeah, that kind of guy you can lean on, that assistant, that you can lean on, who's not necessarily even an assistant anymore. I think he probably viewed Brent as an equal in their coaching room, and he was just happened to be the boss. I remember last year Brent Pry talked about later in the year about the first time he went over to James Franklin's house during COVID, and then he had lost a couple of games in a row. James's family's not there. He's going home to an empty house. And Brent went over and they said, said they almost like spent time crying together in a way, just kind of like venting about the situation and bonding in some ways about that. That, I think, is an underrated element of coaching sets. When you spend that much time with somebody over a decade and you fight with them and fight for them and celebrate with them and argue with them, and that's now that presence is gone. You could be energized in some ways about who you brought in, but who's that guy you're going to want to text, that the first time?
Yeah.
When a recruit says, okay, we got him, that sort of thing, even personally. I don't know, you text something about, hey, my daughter got her driver's license. Maybe he's texting Brent about that sort of thing. So
right.
I think that, that is going to be a really, really, I think, something difficult for him to replace. And looking at it, he probably doesn't even want to necessarily replace that. It's just now this is something new. And that's probably be the best way for him to look at it. That now you just, this is staff part two.
My friend, thank you so much. Appreciate you very much.
Yeah, happy holidays. Appreciate you having me on, Steve. I hope to see you down there.
Yeah, I'll see you down there, but we'll have you on before.
Okay, question. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much.
Yep, stay safe.
Mark Walgerich, SI.com. Another guy that was able to get that court order extended. What? Just want to keep everybody up to date. We have several people in the station asking, how do you get one of those? All right, back with what? Back with more in a moment. Santa tonight, 6 to 7. You're on News Radio 1070 WKOK and also on Eagle 107.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.